And now let's look at story objectively, from the outside in. A story is a design in five parts. The inciting incident, the first major event of the telling, is the primal cause for all that follows, putting into motion the other four elements: progressive complications, crisis, climax, resolution. To understand how the inciting incident enters into and functions within the work, we step back to take a more comprehensive look at setting, the physical and social world in which it occurs. We've defined setting in terms of period in time, duration through time, location in space, and the levels of conflict. These four dimensions frame the story's world, but to inspire the multitude of creative choices a writer needs to tell an original, cliché-free story, he must fill that frame with a depth and breadth of detail. How do my characters make a living? What are the politics of my world? What are the rituals of my world? What are the values in my world? What is the genre or combination of genres? With what conventions? As with setting, genres surround the writer with creative limitations that must be kept or brilliantly altered. What are the biographies of my characters? From the day they were born to the opening scene, how has life shaped them? A true author, no matter the medium, is an artist with godlike knowledge of his subject, and the proof of his authorship is that his pages smack of authority. The audience must believe, or, as Samuel Taylor Coleridge suggested, the audience must willingly suspend its disbelief. Once involved, the writer must keep the audience involved to fade out. To do so, he must convince us that the world of his story is authentic. Authenticity has nothing to do with so-called reality. As Aristotle tells us, for the purposes of a story, a convincing impossibility is preferable to an unconvincing possibility. Even a story set in a world that could never exist could be absolutely authentic. Beyond physical and social detail, we must also create emotional authenticity. Authorial research must pay off in believable character behavior. Beyond behavioral credibility, the story itself must persuade. From event to event, cause and effect must be convincing, logical. The art of story design lies in a fine adjustment of things both unusual and usual to things universal. The writer whose knowledge of subject has taught him exactly what to stress and expand versus what to lay down quietly and subtly will stand out from the thousands of others who always hit the same note. Starting from any premise at any point in the story's chronology, our research feeds the invention of events. The events redirect research. We do not, in other words, necessarily design a story by beginning with its first major event. But at some point, as you author your universe, you'll face these questions. How do I set my story into action? Where do I place this crucial event? When an inciting incident occurs, it must be a dynamic, fully developed event, not something static or vague. In most cases, the inciting incident is a single event that either happens directly to the protagonist or is caused by the protagonist himself. Occasionally, an inciting incident needs two events, a setup and payoff. Jaws. Setup: a shark eats a swimmer and her body washes onto the beach. Payoff: the sheriff discovers the corpse. The inciting incident occurs in only one of two ways, either by decision, a decision made by the protagonist, such as Oskar Schindler's decision to turn his factory into a haven for Jews, or a decision made by someone with the power to affect the protagonist's life, such as Joanna Kramer's decision to leave her husband and child. Or it may occur by coincidence, such as the trucking accident that kills Alice's husband in Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. But however it occurs, the effect of the inciting incident is to radically upset the balance of forces in the protagonist's life. Consequently, he cannot be ignorant of it. He must react. Given the infinitely variable nature of protagonists, however, any reaction is possible. Even the refusal to act is a reaction. For example, Comedy westerns began like this. Bad guys shoot up the town and kill the old marshal. Townspeople gather and go down to the livery stable, run by Matt, a retired gunslinger who's sworn a sacred oath never to kill again. The mayor pleads, "Matt, you've got to pin on the badge and come to our aid. You're the only one who can do it." Matt replies, "No, no, I hung up my guns long ago." "But Matt," begs the schoolmarm, "they killed your mother." Matt toes the dirt and says, "Well, she was old, and I guess her time had come." The protagonist can refuse to act, but that itself is a reaction. A refusal to act, however, cannot last for very long. For as the inciting incident first throws the protagonist's life out of balance, it arouses in him the desire to restore that balance. Out of this need, the protagonist next conceives of an object of desire, something physical or situational or attitudinal, that he feels he lacks or needs to put the ship of life on an even keel. Lastly, the inciting incident propels the protagonist into an active pursuit of this object or goal. And for many stories or genres, this is sufficient. An event pitches the protagonist's life out of kilter, arousing a desire for something he feels will set things right, and he goes after it. But for those protagonists we tend to admire the most, the inciting incident not only arouses a conscious desire, but an unconscious one as well. These complex characters suffer intense inner conflict because these two desires are in direct conflict with each other. No matter what the character consciously thinks he wants, the audience senses or realizes that deep inside he unconsciously wants the very opposite. The Crying Game. Fergus, a member of the Irish Republican Army, is put in charge of a British corporal held prisoner by his IRA unit. He finds himself in sympathy with the man's plight. When the corporal is killed, Fergus goes AWOL to England, hiding out from both the British and the IRA. He looks up the corporal's lover, Dill. He falls in love, only to discover that Dill's a transvestite. The IRA then tracks him down. Fergus volunteered for the IRA, knowing it's not a college fraternity, so when they order him to assassinate an English judge, he must finally come to terms with his politics. Is he or is he not an Irish patriot? Beneath Fergus's conscious political struggle, the audience senses from his first moments with the prisoner to his last tender scenes with Dill that this scene isn't about his commitment to the cause. Hidden behind his zigzag politics, Fergus harbors the most human of needs, to love and be loved. The energy of the protagonist's desire forms the crucial element of design known as the spine of the story. The spine is the deep desire in and the effort by the protagonist to restore the balance of life. It's the primary unifying force that holds all other story elements together. For no matter what happens on the surface of the story, each scene, image, and word is ultimately an aspect of the spine, relating causally or thematically to this core of desire and action. If the protagonist has no unconscious desire, then his conscious desire becomes the spine. The spine of any Bond film, for example, can be phrased as to defeat the arch-villain. James has no unconscious desires. He wants and only wants to save the world. If, on the other hand, the protagonist has an unconscious desire, this becomes the spine of the story. An unconscious desire is always more powerful and durable, with roots reaching to the protagonist's innermost self. Moby Dick. If Melville had made Ahab sole protagonist, his novel would be a simple but exciting work of high adventure, driven by the captain's monomania to destroy the white whale. But by adding Ishmael as dual protagonist, Melville enriched his story with the complexities of an education plot. For the telling is in fact driven by Ishmael's unconscious desire to battle inner demons, seeking in himself the destructive obsessions he sees in Ahab, a desire that not only contradicts his conscious hope to survive Ahab's mad voyage, but may destroy him as it does Ahab. The inciting incident of the central plot must happen on screen, not in the characters' biographies, not between scenes off-screen. The presence of the audience at the central plot's inciting incident is crucial to story design for two reasons. First, when the audience witnesses an inciting incident, the film's major dramatic question, a variation on how will this turn out, is provoked to mind. Jaws, will the sheriff kill the shark or the shark the sheriff? Second, the inciting incident projects an image of the obligatory scene into the audience's imagination. The obligatory scene is an event the audience knows it must see before the story can end. The shark and the sheriff, for example, face to face. Unlike action genres that bring the obligatory scene immediately and vividly to mind, other more interior genres hint at this scene in the inciting incident, then like a photo negative in acid solution, slowly bring it into focus. In Tender Mercies, Max Sledge is drowning in booze and an utterly meaningless life. His ascent from rock bottom begins when he meets a lonely woman with a son who needs a father. He's inspired to write some new songs, then accepts baptism and makes peace with his estranged daughter. Gradually, he pieces together a meaningful life. The audience, however, senses that because the dragon of meaninglessness drove Sledge to rock bottom, it must once again rear its gruesome head, that the story can't end until once again he's slapped in the face with the cruel absurdity of life, this time with all its soul-destroying force. The obligatory scene comes in the form of a hideous accident that kills his only child. If a drunk needed an excuse to pick up the bottle again, this would do. Indeed, his daughter's death plunges Sledge's ex-wife into a drug stupor, but Sledge finds strength to go on. The death of Sledge's daughter was obligatory in this sense. Suppose Horton Foote had written this scenario. A friendless alcoholic, Sledge, wakes up one morning with nothing to live for. He meets a woman, falls in love, likes her kid and wants to raise him, finds religion and writes a new tune. Fade out. This isn't a story, it's a daydream. If the quest for meaning has brought about a profound inner change in Sledge, how is Foote to express this? Not through declarations of a change of heart. Self-explanatory dialogue convinces no one. It must be tested by an ultimate event, by pressure-filled character choice, the crisis or obligatory scene, and then action, the climax of the last act. As a rule of thumb, the first major event of the central plot occurs within the first 25% of the telling. It could be the very first thing that happens. Within the first 2 minutes of On the Waterfront, Terry unwittingly helps gangsters murder a friend. Or, much later, 27 minutes into Taxi Driver, a teenage prostitute, Iris, jumps into Travis Bickle's taxi. The location of the central plot's inciting incident is found in the answer to this question. How much does the audience need to know about the protagonist and his world to have a full response? In some stories, nothing. If an inciting incident is archetypal in nature, it requires no setup and must occur immediately. The first sentence of Kafka's Metamorphosis reads, "One day, Gregor Samsa awoke to discover he'd been changed into a large cockroach." Kramer versus Kramer. A wife walks out on her husband and leaves her child with him in the film's first 2 minutes. It needs no preparation, for we immediately understand the terrible impact that would have on anyone's life. Other inciting incidents may need more time to prepare, for every story world and cast are different, every inciting incident a different event located at a different point. If it arrives too soon, the audience may be confused. If it arrives too late, they may be bored. Bring in the central plot's inciting incident as soon as possible, as soon as it will get a proper reaction from the audience, but not until that moment is ripe. What quality of action must the inciting incident be? Henry James wrote brilliantly about the art of story in the prefaces to his novels, and he asked, "What, after all, is an event?" An event, he said, could be as little as a woman putting her hand on the table and looking at you that certain way. In the right context, just a gesture and a look could mean, I will never see you again, or I will love you forever, a life made or broken. The quality of the inciting incident must be germane to the world, characters, and genre surrounding it. Once conceived, the writer must concentrate on its function. Does the inciting incident radically upset the balance of forces in the protagonist's life? Does it inspire in him the conscious desire for that object, material or immaterial, he feels would restore the balance? In a complex protagonist, does it also bring to life an unconscious desire that contradicts his conscious desire? Does it launch the protagonist on a quest for his desire? Does it raise in the audience's mind the major dramatic question? Does it project an image of the obligatory scene? If it does all this, then it can be as little as a woman putting her hand on the table, looking at you that certain way. The climax of the last act is far and away the most difficult scene to create. It's the soul of the telling. If it doesn't work, the story doesn't work. But the second most difficult scene to write is the central plot's inciting incident. We rewrite this scene more often than any other. So here are some questions to ask that should help bring it to mind. What is the worst possible thing that could happen to my protagonist? How could that turn out to be the best possible thing that could happen to him? Kramer versus Kramer. The worst? Disaster strikes the workaholic Kramer when his wife walks out on him and her child. The best? This turns out to be the shock he needed to fulfill his unconscious desire to be a loving human being. Or, turn it around. What's the best possible thing that could happen to my protagonist? How could it turn out to be the worst possible thing?